Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenore Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Get this, 2 to 3 million deaths are prevented every year thanks to immunization. That's according to the World Health Organization. Vaccines protect against more than 25 debilitating or life-threatening diseases, including measles, polio, meningitis, influenza, and cervical cancer. However, in 2018, an estimated 19 million infants worldwide were not reached with routine immunization services. Around 60% of these children live in 10 countries, including Angola, Brazil, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, and Vietnam. On the program today, we will discuss immunization with our guest, Dr. Chizoba Wonodi, Nigeria Country Director for the International Vaccine Access Center, IVAC, of the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Dr. Wonodi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's great. We're very excited to have you live in the studio. And we will have our discussion with Dr. Wonodi in a moment, but first, new research out of the United Kingdom adds another reason to vaccinate children. A measles infection can zap the immune system's memory, putting people at risk all over again for diseases they already had, like chickenpox. VOA's Arash Arabasadi looks at a lab where scientists made the discovery. Take a listen.
New studies show a devastating and highly contagious disease causes even more harm than previously thought.
For a period of perhaps 5 years after infection, individuals who catch measles, not have the vaccine but catch natural measles, develop this state where they're much more susceptible to infection, and they even seem to be able to catch things that they'd previously become immune to.
Scientists call it immune amnesia, and they say it opens a potentially life-threatening door for the unvaccinated.
If you live in a community where there are more people who experience measles or who don't vaccinate, you are more likely to get other infections because there will be more people susceptible.
Dr. Veleslava Petrova is an immunologist and lead author at the Wellcome Sanger Institute in Britain. Scientists here specialize in genetics.
For the first time, we could use a technique that allows us to read the genes that the immune system uses to produce antibodies and be able to track specific immune cells before and after infection in order to find out what happens to them after measles.
What they found was worse than expected. It's not just immune amnesia, but a hampered ability to respond to new diseases.
After measles, up to 5 years, people are have increased rate of other infections with other pathogens, which shows that there is an effect that we can observe on a population level.
Measles is one of the world's most contagious viruses. It can leave children with brain damage or hearing loss. The CDC says infections are at a 25-year high amid an anti-vaccination movement based upon unproven fears about the safety of vaccines themselves. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Dr. Wonodi, again, thank you so much for joining us. So you heard this report. What is your reaction to this finding?
I think this is really profound to know that after a measles infection, that it can wipe out your immune memory in a way. So this means that the benefit of the vaccines in a way have been underestimated, because if the vaccines protect say children from getting measles in the first instance, they are also protecting against the measles disease itself, plus the reduced immunity that they would have had if they had the measles infection. Do you understand my point?
Yes.
So it's like the benefit of the vaccine is actually much more than just preventing a kid from getting the measles disease itself, but also preventing the immune amnesia that would have happened if they had the measles disease.
It's fascinating to see such a finding. I mean, with all the things that we know about vaccines preventing diseases, and something like that is happening, really. So talk to us in general when we look at the issue around vaccine, because it's something that has been on the forefront, whether it's in debates or funding, or there's so many reasons vaccine are talked about these days. When we look at access to vaccine on the continent of Africa, how do you assess the landscape?
So I think the landscape of vaccine access in Africa has improved tremendously in the last 20 years. That has coincided also with the existence of Gavi, the public-private partnership that supports developing countries to improve their access to vaccines. One thing I have to say is that new vaccines have been introduced. I'll give you an example. The pneumococcal conjugate vaccine was introduced in the US in 1991, if I'm not mistaken. Now, going by historical precedents, if nothing had been done, the PCV vaccine would not have been introduced in an African country because it was too expensive for the countries to buy into it. But with the advent of Gavi, Gavi helped to make sure that those vaccines were introduced in those countries faster than it would have been done otherwise. So that gives us more opportunities to save children. So in Nigeria, for example, it was introduced in 2014.
Okay.
Right. So it made the access to those vaccines, those life-saving vaccines, faster for the children in Africa. Another thing that has happened with Gavi and the work, I have to also give credit to the countries and the country programs and other partners. What they've done is also increase the rates of immunization, right? Okay. The immunization coverage has also gone up. However, we've seen what we call stagnation in coverage in the last 10 years or so, where coverage has hovered around 80-85%.
Why is there such stagnation?
It's a number of reasons. It's easier to vaccinate the first 80% of children because those are the low-hanging fruits.
Okay.
Those are children you find in urban areas whose moms are educated, whose parents are wealthy and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to 80%, 85% and higher, it becomes more difficult to get those children because those children are the children at the last mile. We call them, you know, the last mile. Mm-hmm. Those are also the children who are in extreme difficult situations. Maybe they live in remote rural areas. Maybe they live in urban slums where services are not available. Maybe they even live in conflict affected areas where, because of security issues, health workers cannot go in there to deliver mm-hmm. services. So you have to have particular targeted interventions to get to those children. And that's one of the reasons why in the next 5 years, or actually in the next 10 years, both the WHO and Gavi, they are reprioritizing their program to put the last kid first, the last child first.
The one out of five, that one.
Yes.
Okay. Because it's really fascinating to think that these children, for example, when we look at children in situation of conflict in Northeast Nigeria with Boko Haram, how do you get the vaccine there?
So what the government of Nigeria has done is really impressive. They have partnered with the Defense Ministry.
Okay.
So when they want to go vaccinate children, they go with the military. So they give them military cover. And sometimes they've even trained soldiers to do the vaccination themselves,
really?
Particularly the oral polio vaccination that doesn't require you to be a nurse or a doctor to deliver. So the army has really been a very critical partner in making sure that those kids are vaccinated. And I would say that the result is obvious now. Nigeria has not seen a case of wild polio for three years now.
Yeah.
So we are actually on the brink of being certified polio free, which is very exciting.
Isn't it exciting?
Yes.
You know, because we remember a couple of years ago when you were so close and then
so close.
There was that one case that came out and it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
So now it's here. It seems like something you can touch. Right?
Yes. Later this year, we're expecting the certification. All things being equal.
Yes, that's great. That's really exciting for the country because we've been following this whole polio and vaccine and situation. And it's good to see that out of Pakistan, Afghanistan and Nigeria, it was always the three countries. Now Nigeria may be out of the three. So that's really good news. So let's talk about why, I mean, you touched on it already, but why access to vaccines is so important for global progress?
The truth of the matter is that if there are no vaccines and there is no child and there is no health worker, if you don't have those three things together, there will be no vaccination happening. So you have to make sure that, first of all, the vaccines are procured, right? They are bought. Then secondly, that they are delivered to where the children can access them, either in the health facility, no matter how remote, or in the communities, particularly for communities that live far away from the health posts. So you need to have a concrete plan that will ensure you have the cold chain in place, because, you know, vaccines are susceptible to being destroyed if they are outside the cold chain.
Yeah.
They have to be maintained between a temperature of +2 and +8 degrees centigrade, right?
Yes.
So if they step out of the cold chain, you're pretty much giving the children water. So they have to be maintained to the cold chain from when they are manufactured to when they are injected.
Okay.
So that's number one. Number two is that the health system has to plan it in such a way that every single child is identified.
Okay.
Whenever a child is born, a health worker needs to know. So every child must be mapped onto a health provider that will deliver the vaccine to them. And with the, you know, there's what we call the reaching every child strategy. If that is put in place, every child will be reached. So what that does is that every health worker has a catchment area, and they have a mechanism by which they track all the newborns and record them, put them in a register.
Okay.
And then if those newborns come, they'll tick them and say, these kids have not been vaccinated. But if they are not vaccinated, then they will go with the community leaders to go to the houses to do what you call defaulter tracking, to find out why they've not been vaccinated. So all that requires a lot of funding. It requires a lot of management support. Mm-hmm. It also requires data. And so that's the effort that immunization programs around the world, in Africa particularly, are trying to improve along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Then the third thing is that parents need to know that, you know, that the vaccines are available for their children. In Nigeria, what has happened is that because of the several years of polio vaccination going house to house, some parents don't know that you need more than just the polio vaccination.
Oh, yeah.
They also don't need know that the other vaccinations will not come to your house. You have to go to the health facility. So a lot of education needs to happen. And, so
that's a good point, especially with the idea of going to the vaccine as opposed to the vaccine coming to the house.
Yes.
And this misconception, given that polio is coming to the house. So
yes.
You want to expect the others to come. So can you talk about the role a woman in particular are playing in getting vaccines to people in Nigeria?
Women are playing a very important role. First of all, most of the children that get vaccinated are brought to be vaccinated by their mothers.
Yes.
Or their aunties.
Aunties, grandmas.
But, you know, there is actually a misconception that men are not involved. I've seen several instances, even in northern Nigeria, where the children are brought for vaccination by their fathers. So mm-hmm. we have to give kudos to the fathers also and
yes.
tell them that they should be involved in not just vaccination, but other child health programs. So the role of women play multiple roles. They are caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
They are also advocates. So I coordinate a group of women called Women Advocates for Vaccine Access, WAVA. And these are women who are advocating for funding immunization programs, for immunization uptake. So we work with parliamentarians, we work with governments, we mobilize, and we have champions, women champions in the communities that inform other mothers about vaccination and encourage them to get vaccinated. So we have a range of approaches that we use to mobilize action around vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say by and large that women are the anchors for immunization, and that they should be supported to do that, both at the family level, in the health sector, as well as at the policy level.
Okay, makes sense. And when we look at what has happened this past couple of years with the measles outbreak, there have been cases in even in the United States, in the Western world, where measles outbreak have emerged. And then places like in Madagascar, DRC, the reasons differ to some extent, right? Developing countries, a lot of times, anti-vax movement, people don't want to give vaccination to their children. And then underdeveloped countries, often it's access. People don't even have access to the vaccine. What is your reaction to this dichotomy where, you know, some people are fortunate to have it but refuse, and then some others are maybe looking for it, but they don't have it?
Yeah, so it's very interesting, and you're absolutely right that the reasons differ. So what it means is that we cannot rest on our oars. We have to continue to be vigilant in a program. Even in a program that has high coverage, you have to watch out for anti-vaccination. Some people have said that one of the reasons why the anti-vaccination movement will have an audience is because people no longer see the diseases that the vaccines are preventing, because the vaccines have done such a good job of preventing the diseases. If it's like Ebola, for example, right? When Ebola strikes, anywhere Ebola strikes, I bet you even the, and there's a vaccine for it, even the anti-vaxxers will be lining up for it. So the fact that you don't have the diseases have made some people complacent, but we have to keep educating and fight against it. It's very interesting. I spoke to a lady who used to be an anti-vaxxer, and then she got converted and she's now actually a champion. And one of the things from talking to her, I realized is that even in rich countries, you still have to have people who are advocating at the community level for vaccination, trying to counteract the misconceptions and myths that will be spread within different communities.
Okay.
So we don't just wait for the health provider. Even inside the communities, you should have people who are vaccine advocates that are talking to their friends, their PTAs, their fellow soccer moms about it. That is one of the ways we can counteract it, because that's how the anti-vaxxers work. They work through the, you know, different community networks. Coming to countries where they don't have access and they're not being vaccinated, that is a matter of lack of knowledge, right?
Yes.
Lack of knowledge and lack of access.
Yes. Interesting. Okay. Dr. Wunodi, we're going to take a short break. There's so much more to talk about, and we will be right back to continue our discussion with Dr. Wunodi, and the topic today is immunizations. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Welcome back for those of you joining us late. Tonight on Health Chat, we are discussing immunization with our guest, Dr. Chizoba Wonodi, Nigeria Country Director for the International Vaccine Access Center of the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. So, Dr. Wonodi, you are here in Washington, D.C. You came from Nigeria. Can you give us a sense of what brought you here? Why are you here at this time?
Yes, I am here at the instance of the fantastic campaign called Shot at Life. So it's a campaign of the UN Foundation. Mm-hmm. And what they do is support through advocacy and communication the work that UN agencies do, and also to promote the SDGs. So I've been attending a summit of champions. So they have champions across the U.S. These are ordinary, normal, extra women and men doing extraordinary things.
Okay. How so?
Thank you very much for that. They advocate for immunization funding.
Okay.
Right? They advocate for people like Gavi to be funded, for USAID to be funded, for CDC to be funded, to continue the good work of immunization across the world. So I say they're doing extraordinary things because they don't need to do that. They can just be in the comfort of their homes and just be living their lives. Mm-hmm. But they put themselves out to advocate for immunization funding that will reach children that they may never see, who are living in countries that they may never visit. So I'm really, really, I've been very inspired by these men and women. And we've been having, you know, conversations with them at the summit, and it's been a great time. So I was invited to come and speak to give them a flavor of what it looks like being an advocate for vaccine in Nigeria and what the WAVA women are doing to advocate for immunization in Nigeria.
Interesting. So what do you see as the takeaway after you go back? What will you take away from this?
I'm learning a lot. Absolutely. Okay. One of the things I've learned is how they advocate, not just in Capitol Hill, because today they've stormed the hill today, right? So they're having meetings with their representatives and providing them factual information about why it's important to fund immunization. I'll just give you an example. When you invest in vaccines, right? Mm-hmm. Your return on investment for $1 is $54.
How so?
Tell me if you have any investment vehicle give you that kind of return on investment. That
okay.
is true. That is what it is. When you factor in the cost of illness that vaccines prevent, you factor in the, like a mother who will not go to work because they've taken their ill child to the hospital. Yeah. So lost productivity. And then also factor in the what they call value of statistical life or statistical value of life. I'm not a modeler, but that's their term. But when you factor all those things in, paying for vaccines with $1 gives you back $54 in economic returns. So that's really, really important to know. The other thing they talk about again is the benefits that immunization provides, the number of lives that have been saved. Since Gavi started 20 years ago, 22 million lives have been saved by vaccinating 760 million kids. So there's a lot of information that your rep may not know. So what these men and women do is to provide that information and then tell them why they care about immunization and why they should continue to support immunization.
Okay.
Immunization is not going away anywhere, because as long as children are being born,
mm-hmm.
they have to be protected.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Absolutely.
So speaking of Gavi, you mentioned them earlier. The Gavi replenishment is taking place this year, and it's a time where leaders, stakeholders, advocates, and others get gather to make decisions regarding funding vaccination globally. Tell us more about what it is and why this year is significant.
So Gavi replenishment happens every 5 years, I believe. So every 5 years, they go back to their funders and say, this is what we want to achieve in the next 5 years, and this is how much we need to do that. So this year, it's going to happen in June in the UK, and they're asking for 7.4 billion US dollars,
okay,
which is at level as what they received the last 5 years. And the reason is so important is what I have just told you, that the Gavi funding has been catalytic in many countries, right? Mm. It has catalyzed a lot of improvement. I have seen it in my country with the 5 new vaccines that have been introduced, with the cold chain that have been expanded, with the immunization program that has reached more children and is now poised to reach even those zero-dose children I was telling you about, that last mile child.
Yeah.
Also, Nigeria has also benefited from an expanded support period from Gavi. So, particularly for my country and many other countries, Gavi supports 84 countries, I believe, across the world. So this is what is happening in many other countries, that the effect of the Gavi funding has really been critical and important for the immunization program. So what I want to get across is that the replenishment for Gavi, I think it needs to be successful in order for Gavi to continue to do the good work that it's doing, mm-hmm, in saving lives, vaccinating children, and building health systems. You know, the good thing about immunization is that it reaches every child. So it's now a platform for the primary healthcare system. So if you want to layer in other child health programs, immunization platform is already there.
Yes.
So if you've built up the platform, mm-hmm, then you've done 50% of the work.
That's right.
The rest is to build on other things like, say, pneumonia control, diarrhea control, mm-hmm, on the platform that immunization has built.
Okay. So. Now, going back to what's happening on the ground, and it is something that has been an issue in the past, not to go back to old issues, but when you deal with communities that, I know earlier we mentioned the fact that, you know, in the developed world, there are anti-vaxxers and developing, a lot of time people don't have access. But it's not always the case. There are cases where people are anti-vaxxers as well. They don't want their children to be vaccinated. And sometimes it's linked to culture or religion. How do you approach that? How do you convince a parent that you put your religion aside, vaccinate that child, or you put your tradition aside or your belief and vaccinate that child? It's important. How do you do that?
Okay. So I think for me, what I've seen is that some of those vaccination refusal that has happened, you know, in Nigeria, there was a refusal of polio in, mm-hmm, Kano State many years ago. Do you know, sometimes those refusals are political.
Really?
Huh? Yes.
Okay.
They can be political.
What do you mean by that?
People can use the vaccination program to want to destabilize the government, right? Or to make a point.
Okay.
Because some of the people who were spreading those rumors, some of them were actually medical doctors, so they should know better. Right. So and I think that is, yeah, some of it could be religion, but they use religion as a tool to convince the public or the populace that, you know, they should reject the vaccines.
Okay.
But sometimes it's political. So we need to go beyond just looking at religious angle.
OK.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how Nigeria has addressed it really is to use influencers, religious leaders.
Mm hmm.
Bring religious leaders close, use them as the mouthpiece for the program, use them to build up trust,
okay,
in the system.
Okay.
That is one way to do it.
All right. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Wunobi, we have to leave it there. It was so nice to have you on the show today, and we hope to have you back very soon.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for joining us. And this was Dr. Chizoba Wunobi, Nigeria Country Director for the International Vaccine Access Center. We thank her for joining us today. For more on the show, check out facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Palco.